Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Hey everyone, it's Katie Couric, and I want to tell you about one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called A Really Good Cry with the amazing Roddy Devlukia, a plant-based chef, entrepreneur, and now a podcast host who will guide you through a journey of self-discovery, one tier at a time. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Roddy Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. I'm Katie Couric, and this is Next Question.
I think in the back of my mind, I always knew I hadn't fully recovered.
There have been symptoms that I had in the beginning that have never gone away.
And now that it's been over a year, I look back and I sort of see these patterns.
No one was talking about stuff like that, so it didn't seem like it was COVID related at all, honestly.
I kept very copious notes because I was afraid and I wanted help, and they assured me that nothing was wrong.
It's not just a handful of symptoms we're talking about. We're talking about it messes up your entire body.
Okay, symptoms. Nausea, headache, head pressure.
It feels like sometimes there's 20 rubber bands, tight rubber bands around my skull at any time.
Feeling of water dripping on leg. Sore muscles, fatigue.
I've run marathons in my life. Now it's kind of like walking the dog around the block is like a big ask.
Having trouble some days walking from my living room sofa to the hallway restroom.
I couldn't even think without becoming very tired. I felt like I had been drugged, honestly.
Gastrointestinal issues.
Hives.
Lack of ability to concentrate.
Chicken skin.
Memory lapses.
Sensitive to light.
I lost hearing for a couple months.
Tingling on back, soreness in back.
I've experienced tinnitus, and that's like a ringing in your ear.
This ringing in my ears, it was more like a screeching. It was more like a storm siren mixed with the static from TVs back in the 90s.
If you were to put your hand on a train track, and if you could sense that, just that feeling, and then have that run through your entire body.
It feels like if my spine was like a hollow metal pole and someone took a metal baseball bat and whacked it, like that zoink, that reverberating metal sound, that's what the pain feels like in my spine.
One day I was actually screaming. I was like, my feet are on fire, and I was screaming.
Clumps of my hair were falling out. Random bruising, insomnia, hypersomnia, vertigo, spasms, eye pain, vision issues, cold extremities, temperature regulation, confusion, brain fog, comprehension issues.
I can't stand the name brain fog. I think it's putting it very mildly. It's not just forgetfulness.
For all intents and purposes, I have dementia. I don't know what's going to be gone next.
I have forgotten my phone number. I have forgotten my age. I have not been able to figure out where I live.
I'd spent a long time thinking, okay, this is just anxiety. After all, that's what the doctors keep telling me. That's what the providers keep telling me. So let's buckle down, work. We've got bills to pay.
It just never gets better. It just never gets better. Nothing ever changes. It's like Groundhog Day.
It has changed my life. It has turned it upside down.
This is a disability. Long COVID is a disability.
We're trying to find not a sense of normalcy, but we're trying to find ways to manage our new lives, our new bodies.
You need to take some time to grieve the life that you thought you were going to live.
And I can't verbally express how absolutely soul-crushing all of this was to experience.
The voices you just heard are from people suffering from long COVID, people who generously shared their stories with us.
My name is Janine Hayes.
I'm Jack Guest.
Liza Fisher.
Deepa Singh.
Shamir L. Smith.
Rebecca Hogan.
And I have
been experiencing.
I've been living with.
And all of us are living with long COVID.
Long COVID.
Long COVID.
Post-acute COVID syndrome.
Long COVID goes by a lot of different names. Long-haul COVID, post-COVID-19, or the more formal PASC, post-acute sequelae of SARS-CoV-2. Even though COVID-19 has been with us for more than 2 years, infecting more than 80 million Americans and killing almost 1 million people in this country alone, long COVID remains a mystery. But what is becoming increasingly clear is that an alarming number of people are suffering from it, and its greater impact on individuals, the health system, the labor force, and the economy can no longer be ignored.
I believe this long COVID will be sort of a parallel pandemic of people with disabilities and need for a lot of medical attention who's going to have a hard time getting those things.
Today on Next Question, understanding long COVID, what it is, what it can do to the body, who's affected, and how it's upending countless lives.
My name is Akiko Iwasaki. I'm a professor of immunobiology at the Yale University School of Medicine.
My name is Harlan Krumholtz. I'm a cardiologist at Yale University, and I'm the director of the Yale Center for Outcomes Research and Evaluation. It's an interesting question how I got involved in long COVID. I'm a cardiologist, so it's not where I would naturally be, but in the time of the pandemic, all of us with skills and research and with interest in trying to make a contribution came together and applied ourselves at first to the acute phases of the pandemic. And then over time, I began to see that there was a very important area here that was largely neglected. And that was this long tail of COVID, people who were suffering after having an episode of COVID and it never seeming to end, that it went on for quite a long time and caused quite a lot of disability. And so I was drawn to do it. I had been working with the patient groups and they had been raising issues and I've been listening. And I had the great fortune to start working with Akiko Iwasaki, world-renowned immunologist. And we began to think together how we might be able to address some of these questions.
Let's start with the basics. What is long COVID? How is it being defined?
Long COVID describes a state of a person with lingering symptoms after you've gotten the acute phase of COVID, either severe, moderate, or mild disease. In some cases, asymptomatic COVID can turn into long COVID. And it's essentially people suffering from long-term symptoms for at least 4 weeks after the infection. And that's the CDC guideline, and the WHO guideline is similar, but it's slightly different in saying that within the first 3 months of COVID, you basically suffer from long-term symptoms that's lasting over 2 months. But in both cases, the definition includes longevity of the disease, as well as what happens after the acute phase of the COVID.
While long COVID feels new, it's actually not the first virus that's caused lingering symptoms in some people. The Ebola virus, the original SARS virus, Epstein-Barr virus, these are all known to trigger long-term symptoms in some survivors. Even flu can cause long flu.
However, with the COVID, we are seeing, millions of people infected at once and seeing large proportion of these people still having long COVID afterwards. And so this really has shifted the way we think about acute viral infections in that there's this huge possibility of causing debilitating disease even after so-called recovery from an acute infection.
You've already heard some of the symptoms associated with long COVID, but the sheer number of those symptoms, more than 200, is astounding.
There is a great diversity of symptoms that people are manifesting from this long COVID. And it's hard to say whether one is more important than the other because it depends on the individual. And so we're hearing a lot about brain fog. We're hearing a lot about fatigue, but we're also hearing a lot about other things that are sort of, we wouldn't normally associate with a post-viral syndrome. I mean, ringing in the ears, tinnitus, is something we hear about. We hear about gastrointestinal issues. We hear about changes in menstrual periods. We hear about the tingling and the vibrations. We hear about the tremors, musculoskeletal stuff. We hear a lot of neurologic issues. And I've had so many people say to me, is there anyone else like me? You know, people are feeling this great sense of isolation. They're feeling scared and wondering if they're the only ones in the world who are experiencing this. Because when they go in to see a healthcare professional, maybe they're getting a reaction like, wow, I've never seen this before. And they're wondering, am I alone in this? And then that's what makes them wonder, maybe it's in my head. And yet, when we start seeing that there are many people who haven't never met each other, but are exhibiting the exact same thing, that's making us think maybe you're not alone. You know, in fact, we say that more assertively, you know, you're not alone.
By some estimates, long COVID has pushed as many as 1.6 million workers out of the labor force. And we still don't have a clear idea just how many people are suffering. One study released by the Journal of the American Medical Association late last year suggests that at least half of people who survive COVID-19 face lingering symptoms, and the range of experiences is all over the map.
Some people are so severely affected that they cannot operate normally and that they cannot return to work. Some people are bedbound. Others have multiple symptoms, but they're still able to go to work, possibly not the same extent that they were doing before. And others have just a limited number of symptoms, but they are lingering for extended time periods. So the severity differs dramatically between people.
Researchers have started to unlock a few clues about long COVID, like why it affects some people, but not others.
So there are at least two, if not four, different hypotheses that explain long COVID. One of the hypotheses is that there may be persistent virus or remnants of virus, such as protein and RNA from the virus, that lingers in these patients. And when those things are not cleared properly, then you would develop chronic inflammation as a result, and that could be driving the long COVID disease. The second hypothesis is autoimmune disease, that an acute viral infection like SARS-CoV-2 could trigger autoimmune disease in people. And autoimmune disease essentially means that your own immune system starts attacking your own proteins and molecules. And when that happens, it's very difficult to stop autoimmune activation of these cells. And therefore, that could be driving long-term consequences. There are other hypotheses, such as reactivation of latent viruses that we all have in our body that's usually dormant. But as a result of COVID, those viruses reactivate and cause disease, such as Epstein-Barr virus or other herpes virus family members. There's also a possibility that your gut microbiome, the bacteria that live in the gut or in other areas, may also shift as a result of COVID, and that could trigger some inflammation as well. And then there's also this tissue damage, especially from people who have had severe COVID, that there is significant damage that occur in various tissues, including the lung and other places that may be very difficult to repair, and that's causing long COVID. So there are many different hypotheses, all of which currently have emerging supporting evidence for.
The good news is that understanding what causes long COVID will eventually help treat it.
The treatment of different symptoms for long COVID is a big challenge. First of all, because there are so many symptoms that people report at the same time. So the treatment would differ dramatically depending on what the person is suffering from. And that's why we are really trying to understand the underlying mechanism of disease. So we can properly, first of all, classify the patients into who's suffering from what causes. And then we can establish a clinical trial to test different drugs that may work against that particular causative agent.
I think the key thing is now is just to admit that, one, the ignorance, two, that there's a wide variety of symptoms. Some people have taken this wide variety of symptoms and used it to suggest there is no common long COVID, that this is evidence. I take it as evidence that maybe there are specific, we call them clusters, you know, groupings of people that are manifesting a sort of similar response. And it may be that the underlying mechanism, the thing that's causing it, is common, and that may end up triggering us, giving us clues to what we need to do to help them feel better. But the next proximate step is to bring together this large community, bring together lots of people, and then understand who's like each other, and then connect them. And then see, again, we can share wisdom, learn from each other, and in this partnership with the patients, as participants, as true teammates in the research, begin to start to make progress in ways that we haven't been able to do before.
Coming up,
the internal vibrations, like a earthquake inside your body.
What is it like to live with long COVID?
If the air purifier wasn't like all the way up, I would get swelling in my throat. If I wasn't eating this particular carrot that we would order from Target, I would get swelling in my throat.
We spotlight the upended lives of a few long haulers.
Hey everyone, it's Katie Couric, and I want to tell you about one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called A Really Good Cry with the amazing Roddy Devlukia, a plant-based chef, entrepreneur, and now a podcast host who will guide you through a journey of self-discovery, one tier at a time. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Roddy Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My lowest physical moment with long COVID, it would be difficult to describe because I call it the Corona coaster. It goes up and down.
Liza Fisher is a 38-year-old long hauler living in Houston, Texas. She first contracted COVID in June of 2020 with respiratory symptoms so bad that in the first month, she went to the ER 3 times.
The third ER visit led to my hospitalization in a COVID ICU, and that was on July 31st of 2020. That was 5 weeks after my initial presentation of symptoms. And I was in the ICU that first week and then went into a rehab hospital for several months after.
10 days into her rehab stint, a whole range of debilitating neurological symptoms took hold of Liza's body.
Heavily Parkinsonian-like tremors, which started in my right leg and then moved throughout my body. In addition, I got the internal tremors or vibrations that people speak of, neuropathy in all 4 stages, and I developed a stutter and lost my speech. And that's when I lost my ability to walk. The internal vibrations are like a earthquake inside your body, or if it's a better visualization, if you were to put your hand on a train track, and if you could sense that, just that feeling, and then have that run through your entire body. And then there's also the feeling of a cell phone buzzing. And I get that like almost as if it was implanted into my bone, and that just kind of like goes on and off. And then there's actual tremor of the hand. Like right now it's kind of light, but that's more of like a Parkinsonian tremor. And for someone who gets low blood sugar, it may be similar to experiencing that, but you can't get out of it. My life before COVID was completely different. I was a full-time flight attendant, international flight attendant, part-time yoga instructor. I lived a very active life. I traveled around the world. I was social with my friends. I was very independent. Very, very different. My life now since COVID is very dependent. My mother had to move in from Ohio, which we thought for a couple of months, and she's still here and she no longer works. I'm unable to drive. I don't cook for myself. I don't do my own laundry or really clean for myself yet. It just takes too much energy and I haven't been able to do it all with my tremors. Currently, I go to rehab 5 days a week. Let's see. I have 4 different types of rehab. And then I see a nutritionist. I have a strength program to still build different types of muscles back. I am in the care of 10 different specialists. I try to go to yoga. That's a very important part of my life. It just kind of keeps me centered and grounded. And then I try to do advocacy and research and rest. Eating is probably one of the most challenging things that I do in my day. The amount of energy that it takes to just eat and then digest and process the food a lot of times is more energy than I get from the food. So I have to have small meals throughout the day, and a lot of times it'll, like a half a bowl of oatmeal will take me 2 hours and I may fall asleep eating it. The financial burden has been stressful. I was blessed in that when I was in the hospital, my friends, family, and colleagues had started a GoFundMe, which kept me afloat and paying my rent and utilities while I was in the hospital. And my doctors and all of the medical staff while I was in the rehab hospital urged me to apply for disability, which I struggled with that concept at the time, but later in 2020 did apply for disability and was approved in 2021. A lot of the other payments or coverages on like the affordable healthcare don't cover a lot of my specialists and medications and that. So my family has had to dip into, collective our retirement savings, things like that. And, you know, my mom and I live in like a 1-bedroom apartment together. It's just, we make do. The family decided together as a collective, we would do whatever it takes. One of the therapists in my rehab hospital said that You need to take some time to grieve the life that you thought you were going to live. And that was a very hard thing to hear, but in a way, a necessary one.
I was very angry about having long-haul COVID, especially in the beginning. I was just so upset, and I just kept being like, why is this happening? Like, why did this happen to me? Like, why am I not better?
This is Janine Hayes, a 43-year-old long-hauler. Janine and her husband, Brian Mason, started out the pandemic living in Brooklyn. In March of 2020, Brian was the first to get COVID. While Brian suffered a scary bout of double pneumonia, Janine's initial COVID symptoms barely registered.
We were really getting him better. Then I started to get these just strange allergies after having what felt like a 48-hour stomach bug. It was really only maybe 3 to 4 weeks later that I just started to get like the burning feet, breaking out in hives, breaking out in rashes. I would eat something, my throat would swell. I was just becoming more and more allergic to our apartment. Just everything in it was just suddenly like a minefield of allergy attacks. By August of 2020, he had to give me the EpiPens because I ended up going into full anaphylaxis 2 days in a row just after eating lunch. It was as if I was allergic to the entire place. Like I'd have to wear a mask inside all day. We had to always have like the air conditioning like on full blast because for some reason, if the apartment or if the place was too warm, I would get swelling in my throat. If the air purifier wasn't like all the way up, I would get swelling in my throat. If I wasn't eating this particular carrot that we would order from Target, I would get swelling in my throat. Our doctors were trying to help as much as possible. They were, like every doctor at that time, learning with us. So I contacted the Mayo Clinic. I wrote them my story and I was like, can I get in to the Mayo Clinic? This is what's happening to me. I sent a letter to Johns Hopkins because, again, it was another place I knew had been doing it, being at the forefront of public health. And then both of them sent a rejection letter. We're not able to accept your case. And then it was in the fall that our doctor had heard that Mount Sinai was starting a post-COVID care center. And she said, okay, this is where you guys need to get in. We were really excited. We called and they were like, the first appointment is March 3rd, 2021.
Yeah. So for those 6 months, 6 or 7 months, we were sort of on our own.
That's Brian. Brian took over as Janine's full-time caregiver, helping her 24 hours a day, while also researching and recruiting a team of doctors to address her wide-ranging symptoms, from the allergies to neurological issues to cardiac concerns.
And so those months were a process of basically interviewing and vetting doctors and saying, okay, here's our situation. Are you interested in being a part of this? Because it's a dire situation. We're trying basically at this point every day to keep her alive. And every night, you know, I'm basically staying up all night, making sure that she's awake, she's breathing, that she's making it through the night. It was a learning course for me and I guess in medical advocacy. We're very open about saying we had a fantastic medical experience, specifically as African-Americans, but also understanding that that is not the case always for African-Americans and saying that that was always not even the case for us. Those instances did pop up where, you know, we received a certain level of treatment or certain reactions from doctors that were clearly based on our race. And in those instances, we said, well, that's fine. Thank you. No, thank you. We're going to, you know, work with somebody who's willing to work with us.
And I think Brian always is so like gracious. He always says like we were doing this, but like he was doing this. I was just like a lump. Like I wasn't really doing anything. He was keeping me alive.
But things were looking up for Janine. The couple moved out of Brooklyn and bought a house a few hours north of the city. They had built some structure and a strict medicine regimen that kept Janine relatively protected from extreme allergy outbreaks. They felt safe.
That was actually an exciting time. I was, you know, we felt like we had like a regimen. Like we were like, all right, these are the foods that you can eat. Like the house is like, we're now in a very rural area. So the air is so fresh here. And actually, I was doing really well. And a family member wanting to celebrate us buying our first house sent a plant, a house plant. One day, I decided I was going to trim it. And whatever it released, it started a massive attack for me. I again went into anaphylaxis. Brian had to administer the EpiPen, and we had to call 911. Two EpiPens, yeah. And we had to call 911 and be transported to the emergency room, which is fortunately just a few minutes from our home.
So that was when things got really bad. So everything that had happened before we thought was bad. Turns out that was sort of the kind of the warm up round. Without kind of trying to yada, yada, yada things too much, by the end of the year, she was no longer able to walk, speak, or eat. She was entirely bedridden. She was on a series of medicines, steroids, high-dose steroids that were tamping down her immune system to control the anaphylaxis. But as a result of that, she also developed sort of a body-wide infection that made things even worse. She became far weaker than I've ever seen her.
I felt like I was dying. Like I it's the closest I've ever felt to that. I felt myself slipping away.
She had gone from being this smiley, happy, energetic person to being mute and in pain and really angry all the time because she couldn't communicate.
But finally, the date arrived for their appointment at the Mount Sinai Post-COVID Care Center. Early in the morning on March 3rd, 2021, they piled into a car they borrowed from their neighbors and drove the 2 hours from their home to New York City.
We got there to the Post-COVID Care Center. We met with the doctor, and I will never forget that the first thing she said was, she listened to everything, and then after that she said, "It's going to be okay. Everyone who comes here gets better." Mm-hmm. And just to hear that was like, it was just because I was like, I felt like, oh, this is it. Like, this is my life now. Like, I can't really move. I can't really eat. I can't really do anything. And to hear that I could get better, and I didn't believe her. I have to say, she was like, "In 6 months, you will be on a much, much better than you are today." And I was like, there's no way in 6 months I'm going to be able to walk better and eat better and all of this stuff.
I saw it.
But he did. Yeah, he did. He did see it.
The really amazing thing with the COVID care center was that they were able to give us diagnoses, and they were able to let us know, reassure us that everything that she had was treatable, that it had all been caused by COVID, but these were all things that would improve. As much as we talk about how amazing our medical team has been over the course of this, we do also understand that we're only able to access this level of healthcare, you know, because of the Affordable Care Act. It feels like we have this belief, this feeling in this country that you only deserve as much as you can afford. And we're seeing that pushed more and more to the forefront with COVID. You know, this idea that if you can afford the healthcare that will help you to live, then you can live.
Yeah, and if, you know, there are people listening to this that are thinking about the solutions, I just hope that they understand, like, we, you know, this is a disability. Like, long COVID is a disability. You can't go back to life as you were. I look back at my photos in my phone when your photos, like, will pop up and they'll be like, "What you did, like, 3 years ago." And I'll be like, "Oh my God, on this one day, we were like at a art opening. We went out to a dinner. We went to a party and then we didn't get home till like 3 o'clock in the morning." And that was very normal for us to be out all night and going out with friends and, you know, just kind of a crazy, like crazy New York City life.
Brooklyn life.
And I'm like, I can't do that. Like, I can't go to a restaurant. We don't go to restaurants because I don't know all the ingredients that are in the food. Even when we visited some family over the holidays, we brought all of our own food because he had to cook my menu of like approved items that I can eat. When people do come here, we do tell them, you can't wear anything that's perfumed. That means no like lotions that have perfume in them. We give a list of like, you could use an unscented soap from this brand that's good. Don't put product in your hair because we can't have anything like that.
Nothing's incidental anymore. Everything's a strategy, everything's a plan, and every detail matters because, you know, something as small as moving a houseplant can cause a serious problem.
We need help from the government in terms of being able to take care of our care. We need help for caretakers like my mm-hmm. husband, because he's doing this full time and making sure that we have a company that still continues to run. I just want people to understand that the long haul is a long haul.
We'll be right back. Hey everyone, it's Katie Couric, and I want to tell you about one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called A Really Good Cry with the amazing Roddy Devlukia, a plant-based chef, entrepreneur, and now a podcast host who will guide you through a journey of self-discovery, one tear at a time. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Roddy Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My life before COVID was, it was a beautiful life. It was a very active life.
Shamir L. Smith is a 39-year-old middle school teacher living in Baltimore, Maryland.
Being a teacher was like, was that job and that career was a godsend to me. The best career I've ever had.
Like Janine, Shamir's long COVID journey turned her life upside down. Also like Janine's, Shamir's story reveals some ugly truths about our healthcare system.
I first experienced my symptoms March 22nd, 2020. I will never, ever forget that day. It started off very mildly. I thought that I had a sore throat and a little bit of a cough. But shortly thereafter, those symptoms began to grow into more and into more serious symptoms after that. I was afraid and I wanted help, and they assured me that nothing was wrong. I was turned away many times. My life and my relationships, how I view doctors, have changed. Today, I feel fear and anxiety when I think about going to a doctor's office, not just because COVID is still running rampant, it's because I don't trust doctors. I don't trust that they have my best interest at heart. I've experienced a plethora of doctors who weren't listening to me. They weren't hearing me. They weren't thinking about me. They were arguing with me about my condition and how I felt, and they weren't trying to treat me. And I'm gonna tell you the truth. As a Black woman, since I started working at 16, I was always told by my mother, my aunties, and other women in my family and other women who were my friends and older friends who said, girl, you've got to make sure you cover yourself in everything when you work. And so what I learned from that is no matter what I was doing, to always take notes about my experience and what happened. That advice was ingrained in me as a Black woman when I went to hospitals and medical centers and laboratories. For me, what I knew from the very beginning, from the very first time I went to the hospital, is that there is an expectation, an unspoken bias, that Black people are not aware of their bodies. And so we have to work harder to convince doctors about what is happening in our bodies and the kind of care that we need. Because as I was starting to read notes off my phone with 50 plus symptoms and what happened every day to me and my journal entries off my phone, those doctors were looking at me in awe because they couldn't believe that this Black woman knew how to articulate what was happening inside of me. I argued with a doctor as I sat in the hospital for 7 days. I argued with him about the fact that long COVID caused occipital neuralgia and trigeminal neuralgia. He tried to convince me, well, no, I went to Hopkins. I know what's going on, and COVID doesn't cause any brain issues, only for us to find out 2 years later that it absolutely does. And so I think for a lot of us as Black people, we already know that from the workplace and education, in legal matters to CYA. And so what that means is just to cover our butts, to make sure that in writing, what we are saying and experiencing can also be translated and transcribed to doctors. Because I knew that if I did not take those notes as a Black woman, that because of the racism that I experienced, I had a feeling that I would not be taken seriously.
600 miles west in Louisville, Kentucky, Deepa Singh was also having a hard time getting help.
I'd go into these appointments and I couldn't be taken seriously.
Deepa is 30 now, but she was 28 when she started seeking answers for her long COVID symptoms.
I'd already been to so many appointments where I was told, oh, you have a sinus infection, or oh, you have allergies, you have anxiety, anxiety induced by this pandemic and these lockdowns. And because of that, I would switch providers. I'd be like, okay, well, this is a dead end. Let's go to this other provider. Okay, that's a dead end. Let's try this other provider. And I believe that first year in 2020, I had 70 plus medical claims alone. I was starting to believe that the providers who were telling me it was psychosomatic and it was anxiety driven. I truly felt like, okay, well, I'm having a mental break.
I sought hospital treatment and care about 12 times over 6 months. I was turned away many times, but before I was turned away, I often was told that I wasn't well in my head. I was too anxious. And I was also, you know, sadly, you know, this affects me as a Black woman. I was seen after white men and other men. I wasn't receiving the same kind of care as the men in the hospital across from me. And that was devastating. I have insurance. I've been working as a teacher at that time for 5 years. I checked off all the boxes that would have made me a candidate to get care. And I didn't receive the care that I deserved. And I know that many people don't either, even still after 2 years.
Tomorrow on Next Question, who's helping long COVID sufferers get the care they need and deserve? We unpack the systemic issues at the heart of these patients' experiences and explore the heroic efforts of the few heeding the long COVID call. That's part two of our long COVID deep dive coming tomorrow. To see some of the experiences of our long COVID patients, you can check out my YouTube page where my video team has posted powerful stories of the many and varied ways long COVID has affected the people with whom we spoke. If you're suffering long COVID symptoms and are looking for some help, you can reach out to long COVID support groups like Body Politic and Survivor Corps. Thanks so much for listening. Next Question with Katie Couric is a production of iHeartMedia and Katie Couric Media. The executive producers are me, Katie Couric, and Courtney Litz. The supervising producer is Lauren Hansen. Associate producers, Derek Clements and Adriana Fazio. The show is edited and mixed by Derek Clements. For more information about today's episode or to sign up for my morning newsletter, Wake Up Call, go to katiecouric.com. You can also find me at Katie Couric on Instagram and all my social media channels. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hey everyone, it's Katie Couric, and I want to tell you about one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called A Really Good Cry with the amazing Roddy Devlukia, a plant-based chef, entrepreneur, and now a podcast host who will guide you through a journey of self-discovery, one tier at a time. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Roddy Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.